Cultivated Being Podcast.
Hey, everyone.
Oh,
and listeners.
And listeners. And
Jake. Hello to you, too.
We're the two brothers everyone wants to listen to when it comes to health and other such things.
Yeah, I'm Dr. Jake Hyde. This is my brother, Dr. Nick Hyde. And this is the Cultivated Being Podcast, a podcast where we talk about doctor stuff and brother stuff and everything in between. Called Cultivated Being because this is a podcast about cultivating a healthy life. It's about doing the groundwork in the soil to produce fruit later in your life. Nick, we got to start by apologizing to people.
I know. I've been dreading this because, yeah, if anyone noticed, if anyone pays attention, we did not post the podcast. We went a whole week without posting one. And not only
did someone notice that and reach out to me, but they noticed that we promised a pod where we were recording together in person.
Yeah.
And so that didn't happen either.
Last week, and Jake and I were together.
So yeah, let me explain what happened. Nick messed it up somehow.
That's a pretty good start to the story. However, all the right ingredients were there. We were there together. We had a microphone. It was plugged in to a laptop. Mm-hmm. And then we couldn't figure out. We had technical difficulties. And then we just decided it was probably more fun to just hang out. And that's what we did.
I mean, we did spend a good 30 minutes trying to problem solve. We just were incapable. Mm-hmm. And somewhere in there was Nick messed up.
Yeah. So probably the best, it would have been the best podcast of all time, guaranteed.
Yeah.
I think that's when we started to look into all the different kind of dance moves. I mean, that's when we got.
Is that when that happened?
I think that's when it started to happen. That would have been good. Not great podcasting material on audio, but video would have been pretty good.
Speaking of which, Nick, you didn't say anything about my haircut that I got. Nothing.
Because
what?
Your hair's just, oh, there we go. That's it. Now we got the whole view.
Yeah.
It was just the tilt of the computer. Yeah.
Okay. Well. That's fine.
Nice.
And
super trendy. Yeah. Very fresh.
Nice. Yeah. So fresh. And, so speaking of video, eventually that's going to happen. We're going to have a YouTube channel. All these pods that we've done have been recorded. Nick and I just staring at each other through computer screens, which you can see. You'll be able to see both.
Mm-hmm.
And that's coming to you soon.
Yep.
And maybe other special videos, non-podcast exclusive YouTube videos.
Exclusive. And not to mention, we had a very successful event last week.
We did.
And that was a blast to do. We had really good people come. Awesome people. I hope I'm friends with them for the rest of my life. That's how good of quality people they were. And we talked about health and healing, and then we did some practical work on everybody. It was really cool.
It was a lovely evening.
A Grammy nominated studio. The studio
was nominated,
but there's been albums recorded in that studio that were Grammy nominated. So
yeah. Well, when in Nashville, you can just stumble into a studio where people have been making Grammy quality work.
Probably true.
Nick.
Yeah.
I'm really tired. I don't know about you. I never start a podcast this way, but full disclosure, I'm wiped, man. What can I do? I think it's from traveling because I was in Nashville with you and then I was Ohio. And admittingly, sleeping on couches and
Some babies in the house.
Yeah. So there are some youngins.
Our sister nephews. Emily does listen to this. So.
Yeah. Hi, Emily. Your boys are the best. They're the sweetest and so much fun. And that's not just why I'm tired. Although playing with little boys all day, these like it's a four and two respectively, and then a, like a 2 month old. But I don't have the muscles for that. I don't have the endurance built up.
I gotta think about it, man. When you are a kid, your whole life's about candy and playing. That's literally what they live for. They can go, they will literally go all day. That's why you see so many parent pictures of like a kid asleep on a slide or something. They will go until they can't.
Something I think that I was kind of reflecting on is this idea of, you know, you and I, we work with adults that are sometimes they're dealing with emotional stumbling blocks, and they can be unstable or erratic. And you and I know are both fairly sensitive to how people are feeling. But the thing about hanging out with a 4-year-old and a 2-year-old at the same time is just the swings are a lot for me, and I can't, as a practitioner, like rally people back like I can in a session with me. So it's just like, we're having a good time. We built a fort. Everything's going really well. One kid has a shovel, just for some reason, a toy. We're not shoveling anything. Just they're possessing it. And then the other one's like, now I want that shovel. And the other one's like, no. And then it's World War III in this little fort that we built, and no one's happy. And they're crying out of nowhere. We're having the best time and then crying. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, that's fine. But when that's all day, and I know, Emily, you're listening to this, good on you. All the other moms listening. It's a lot of energy required to manage people, little tiny people. Mm-hmm. That have no capacity to process the challenge as it's happening in their life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you're reflecting on that. And I want to get into a topic that I think is interesting, which is...
Well, really quick, I want to say this before I forget to tell you. Okay. So Sunday night, Claire and I were walking through San Francisco, going to dinner, going to get some tacos. And we do
family birthday shout out. So
yeah,
I'm interrupting my wife's you, but birthday. Happy birthday, Claire. Yeah. Happy belated. If we got to record this on the proper day, we could have released it on your actual birthday.
That's true. But
we're going to be a week late.
So here we are. I kind of had a birthday treat because this is totally legendary, mind blowing. Okay. Walking across the street. And this guy pulls up on a Vespa, orange Vespa. You can't miss it. And I look at him and I'm like, that guy looks really familiar. Wait a minute. That guy looks like somebody I've been obsessed with my entire life. And then I was like, wait a minute. That guy lives in San Francisco. And I look over and there you go. It's Stephen Jenkins.
I was going to say Stephen Jenkins.
Third Eye Blind. And I hadn't slept all Saturday night. I'd gotten off a plane and went to dinner with Claire. And so here I am. I'm like, I don't know if I'm dreaming this or what. I wish I would have had more. It was the whole shock factor. He's one of the reasons why I write music. You know, I love his stuff. And so the only thing I could think of is I'm like, hey, sorry, I don't want to bother you, but I'm an enormous fan. And meanwhile, it's like a red light at the stoplight. And I'm just like standing in the middle of the street. And I'm like, yeah, I don't know exactly what else I say. But then he asked me if I was going to his concert that's happening in a week. And I didn't know what
they're on tour with one of your other favorite bands. They're touring with Jimmy World.
And he just mentions the place. He's like, hey, are you going to, you know, so-and-so? And I'm like, tonight? No.
And he's like, what are you doing later, Nick?
And he was like, no, are you going to the show? And I was like, what do you say? I just told him he's like my icon and I'm not going to the show and I totally could be. Just so be I was like, no, I'm out of town. I wish I could. And then I was like, man, I really screwed it up on the end there. But
yeah. All right. Well, here you go, Nick. Steven Jenkins, if you're listening, and we know you are. Nick kind of screwed that up. He's please, going to your show.
Please give me another shot. No, I mean, man. Here's the thing, though. A lot of my guys I do look up to musically, I know if I knew them in real life, it would probably ruin the whole thing for me. I know
he's one of those people.
Yeah, he's probably really conceited, arrogant. I wouldn't want to spend any time with him, but he writes really good music.
Yeah, I love his stuff. Yeah. I wouldn't just judge him based on what I've seen, because I've seen him live a couple times, although he does put those vibes off, but with one of those like friends of one of my best friends in college was his assistant, personal assistant for a while. I've heard some stories.
Well, the fact that his entire band has broken up like 5 times and he doesn't have the same band that he used to, pretty good sign.
Nick, what else do we have in celebrity gossip? Wouldn't you like to work with him now? Like treat him?
I would. Yeah, totally.
I know. Me too.
If you are a celebrity listening to this,
and your band keeps breaking up because of you,
please contact us and we'll help you out. Actually, who would be? Because I know you treat some celebrities that we're not allowed to mention. I treat some semi-celebrities I'm not allowed to mention. Who would be your top 3 celebrities that you're not treating that you would like to? Just in case they're listening.
Well, everyone already knows I don't treat Steven Jenkins. That would be an interesting one. Mm-hmm. No, I would like to treat Tom York, the Radiohead frontman. Because I had thought about that recently, listening to his music. So that one's already ready to go.
You're like, I could diagnose a lot of what's going on with you, man.
Yeah. Well, that would be, he'd be a tough case. Be interesting.
He would be, yeah.
Your turn. I'm going to think of another one.
Hayley Williams Barrymore. We're like one removed, man. I'm going to do whatever it takes to get her.
That's a possibility. It's a very possibility. Especially for my Nashville practice, because she lives there.
Yeah, it's more possible for you, but that's why I'm saying it has to be me.
Okay. Another Nashville person, because I feel like it's possible for me, just because I'm like, I've worked with some people in his circle, would be Justin Timberlake. That's on my list, not because of his, because of who he is and whatever type of health issues or mental health issues I think he may have. It's just because I think he's cool and I think it's possible. So I'm putting that out there in the universe.
Fair enough. It'd be cool to have a famous chef, maybe too. That would be cool. Yeah,
I got one of those.
I know. I feel like we always go around the musicians. We like the musicians a lot.
I would like to, just because someone I respect, and I've never worked with a person of this level of discipline on something, but I would like to work with LeBron James. There you go.
How much does he fork out again per year on his health?
It's over $1 million, I think.
I've heard that. That's pretty crazy.
Are like, I think somewhere in the ballpark at maybe 2 million. And that's on like personal chefs and trainers and specialized doctors, physicians, things like that. Probably flying them around to, you know.
It's incredible.
Yeah, well, get on that payroll. He makes so much more than that.
He wouldn't even notice you on that payroll.
No, I would. Yeah, and I wonder if he's got someone in his arsenal of doctors that does anything like what we do. I wonder that. LeBron, if you're listening, and I know you are, email us. Let us know if you're using someone like us or if you'd want my services.
Well, I will say, okay, so this is kind of on the same topic, but maybe a little bit different. I see a lot of people out there who use the word holistic. I know that's a word that we feel really comfortable using. I feel like that describes, you know, my focus as a practitioner. But most of the times when I see someone use the word holistic, it just means that like they also incorporate nutrition.
Or they just don't prescribe drugs.
Yeah.
I think sometimes it's like holistic, which I think they should be using the word naturalistic.
Yeah.
You want to try and define like a distinction between naturalistic and holistic?
Yeah. Well, clearly, I mean, holistic is about the whole being, right? So we have your mental health, your emotional health, your physical health, and a lot of people would use spiritual health too.
I think to be holistic, you got to use spiritual health.
You got to incorporate spiritual health. And that can't just be like, oh, I do some breathing exercises once a week, or I do yoga, which is like really physical too. I mean, yoga itself, if you really, really do yoga, that is holistic practice, but that's not what most people do. They're like going to hot yoga,
toning up their core.
Yeah.
Getting the sweat.
Yeah. It's not really holistic to me.
You want some word knowledge?
Yeah.
So our word for health that we use in the modern English language comes from like an old, or it's derived from an old Anglo-Saxon word, which is the word hall. Okay, so that's the root of holism or holistic healthcare. Now, hall was a word that literally meant, at the time, integrity. So integrity and health were like synonymous, essentially. We'll get to integrity in a second. But hall became the root word that became in our modern language, whole, as in wholeness, and then later the word for health. So there you go. So the word health comes from wholeness, and it comes from integrity. And integrity really means, you know, different things combining to be one, like unified. And what does that mean? Different things combined to be one, the different parts of you, like you mentioned, your physical life and your mental, your emotional, your spiritual.
Yeah. And it's very difficult to just use one modality and get all of those parts and have it actually integrate, like you were saying, right? It's like, it's not just that we want to be like, oh, I'm going to do something for the spiritual health. I'm going to do something for the physical health, the mental health, the emotional health. We're doing four separate things, but we actually want all those to integrate into one thing. So that's what we do with Emergence. And that's why I love it. It's like, this is literally integrating. We can see how spiritual things going on in your life can lead to physical effects and vice versa. And we treat that. We treat the wholeness of the body. But it's hard to do that if you're like, well, we're going to use nutrition and actually integrate all parts of you. And I'm not being, it sounds like I'm being, I don't know, judgmental about this. I'm not. I'm just saying, for all of you out there who see the word holistic, it just doesn't always mean what it should mean.
Yeah. You want to pick on chiropractors for a bit? Since we are chiropractors.
Yeah, certainly.
I think a lot, like all chiropractors by their training are naturalistic, meaning they use natural means to elicit a change or a response in the body, right? So they don't use anything artificial. That makes sense?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But if the chiropractor is looking for subluxations or these little misalignments in the spine or other joints, and then they use a corrective thrust or a chiropractic adjustment to, you know, in an attempt to align the body, then that is holistic or not holistic. If that's all they do, it could be a part of holistic care.
Yeah.
But what do you think that is?
Well, yeah, naturalistic by the terms we used. But they do really believe that they're influencing the nervous system, which influences everything. And in some cases I could see like, okay, maybe it does in some certain situations. Like, okay, yeah, I've seen kind of a change and I've been a part of that myself, but completely unpredictable, I think. I mean, that's what I'm saying. So I think it's like they're being holistic on accident a lot of times. Unless they're being extreme. I mean, I would say there are some chiropractors out there who are extremely artful, very specific. They get as reproducible results as possible. But that's not by and large the rule. That's the exception.
And they might be more intentional in their approach to this idea of wholeness. Like, I know just a lot of chiropractors who palpate, this thing's not moving the way it should. Let me put some motion into it. And then we move to the next segment or area where there's not motion, and then we put some motion into it. And
yeah. Which while is you can very get healthy for the joint, I mean, I know,
and while you can get profound results from that.
Yeah.
I think if you're going to consider yourself holistic, I think part of it is like you're not treating symptoms. So I think the definition they use in the medical world of allopathic versus holistic. So does that make sense? Is that a term we used on this before? Allopathic?
We've never used allopathic, I don't think.
So allopathic is a word to describe what you would consider mainstream healthcare, which is treating symptoms. And the philosophy behind that is symptoms are a stress on the body, and that stress keeps the body from performing as well as it could. So get rid of the symptom and the body's freed up now to work better. And so that's the idea of you have a headache, take some Tylenol for your headache, headache goes away, and now that stress is gone and the body can work better, right? Following Nick,
I'm
scratching
following.
Your beard very pensively. It's good feedback for me.
It helps me to think.
Okay. So that's a very basic example of allopathic philosophy. Now, the holistic philosophy is that symptoms themselves are caused. And you want to look at the whole person to identify why this symptom needed to exist in the first place. Okay. And I wouldn't say one philosophy is better than the other. They're both very good at certain things that they do. Now, the chiropractic adjustment, if you're looking for a subluxation, which is to say, like, depending on your definition, and there's the chiropractics aren't exactly aligned on that, but say you're just looking for a misalignment in the spine. If that's what you're doing, you're looking for a subluxation and you're correcting subluxations, holistic or allopathic? Nick?
Yeah, it's allopathic.
Because something causes subluxations. And the founder of chiropractic talked about this. What does he say causes subluxation?
Thoughts, traumas, and toxins.
Yeah. So you could say, right, stress. And it's either mental, emotional stress, physical stress, or biochemical stress.
Yeah. I mean, okay. We're definitely getting into a corner here that maybe I want to avoid.
Nick, are you going to upset somebody?
I don't know who listens to us completely, but yeah. We only speak the truth. but we do so with kindness and generosity. So, I mean, I love this sounds negative towards chiropractic. Obviously we're not being that way. Jake and I, we went to chiropractic school. We love it. You know, these are some of our best friends and it is really effective. But I want to be, I mean, there's a lot we can say about this. And the point is, the reason why Jake and I are splitting hairs on this is because we really are, our aim is to be truly holistic. And so let's talk about that from our standpoint, Jake.
Okie doke.
So what makes us more holistic?
Yeah, and I wouldn't be like making relative statements like I'm more holistic than another person, just kind of defining philosophies. Mm-hmm. All right. One is like symptoms are tough on the body. Alleviate a symptom, the body is freed up to do better. Heal, for example. Right. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's a very effective philosophy for a lot of health issues. And then holistic, just defined as symptoms are caused by something. Something is overloading the body's ability to self-regulate and heal, which is why a symptom occurred. Mm-hmm. What's overloading the body, right? And it could be stress. That could be under physical stress, mental, emotional, spiritual, right? So they're both looking at stressors on the body. One's just viewing like the actual symptom as a main stressor. And it is. So symptoms are both caused and causal.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this is the reason why there's sometimes when people are in so much pain, your goal isn't to integrate everything in their system right off the bat. It's usually like, let's get you a little bit out of pain and then we'll focus on the whole picture because they're like almost too far to one side, you know? I will say though, on my part, it's holistic when the idea is more about integrity. So I like when you brought that term into it because it's integrity of the system, right? And when we have imbalance is just like an extreme on one side or the other, right? Too much or too little. I mean, homeostasis is an example of balance in the system. Mm-hmm. And I think when we bring integrity, right? Like, it's about, okay, let's have what's going on with your spirit, what's going on with your mind, right? The spirit should really govern the soul, which the soul is the mind, right? It's the psyche. It's the mind and it's the emotions, the thoughts and the emotions. And then the body, and the spirit should govern the soul. The soul should govern the body. But so really it's when we are aligned in those three, that's what like the ultimate goal is because, you know, truth is I can't like isolate you from the rest of your life. It's like, okay, I'm going to work on you, but you're going to go out and like, you're going to get other things happen to you. And, you know, I can't like, you might be coming in for one issue now, but there's going to be another issue later and we can't stop that from happening. But what we can do is make you aligned and resilient because you are one. You're not warring forces.
Integrity.
Yeah. That's one thing I like about Hawkins is, you know, if ultimately in life, what we're aiming at, right? I think this is important always to remind ourselves.
Dr. David Hawkins.
Dr. David R. Hawkins. I wonder what his middle initial is, R. I don't know, but
Rudolph.
yeah. Think about that.
David Rudolph Hawkins.
So he was saying, you know, really our ultimate goal in this life is enlightenment. And with enlightenment, you get peace and joy. And that's what everyone's really looking for. Mm-hmm. Even when they're looking for pleasure, what they're really hoping for is joy. And it's like, I don't mind if I have a headache, if I'm enlightened, it's like the truth. I'm not going to stop every headache that's ever going to happen to me for the rest of my life. So, I mean, what we're really looking for is that kind of high level of peace and security. And he says, it's not about getting that, right? He says it's not bad to want it, right? But we don't want the duality of like winning, losing, whatever. Instead, it's more, in order to get it, we have to go on from like the opposite disposition. We don't go out and acquire it, right? We actually just allow it. Mm-hmm. We allow it to happen. And that's what I think the epitome of integrity in your whole system is. It's about allowing things and accepting them for what they are. And most of the symptoms anyways that we experience is just the body saying, hey, look, there's something going on here. Pay attention. Right? If we were really in tune with our system, we probably wouldn't have symptoms because we would get the message before our body needed to give it to us.
Right.
You know?
Yes. Symptoms are like behavior modifiers. It's communication like, hey, Nick, this thing is not okay. You should do something.
The body has very limited ways of doing that.
And sometimes symptoms are just like part of your healing function. So I got back from these travels and I just felt like this sinus drain in the back of my throat the first day I was back. And I was like, well, that's kind of annoying, but I'm like, oh, but that's my body doing what it's supposed to do. Probably just getting, you know, ahead of some like infection that was growing and just getting rid of it. Great. And I never got sick or anything. I just, that first day back, there was like this drain in the back and I was like, oh, it's weird. And then it went away and I never got sick. So that was a symptom, but that was my body behaving in a healthy manner.
Yeah. And that's true for every part of us, including our organs, including, you know, our vision, our dreams. They all try to communicate something to us. Not to say that all of my dreams really have meaning. I'm not saying that. Last night I was fighting a giant in my dream for some reason. I just remember people shoving me out a door and being like, you have to go fight that person. I was like, what? Why? Give me reason. I fought him. So
mine last night was like playing kind of an ultimate frisbee type of thing. But like in a very crowded mall, so crowded.
That sounds kind of fun.
Yeah, it's just so crowded in there. Just trying to throw a frisbee.
Yep.
Who knows?
Hey, Jake, I did have a question I've been meaning to ask you. Mm-hmm. So I was reading something about language today. Written by a guy who I'm considering my like advisor right now in life, even though he passed away a couple hundred years ago. But I read him every day because I feel like he's got really good moral philosophy. And so I could just read him every day and be like, oh, this is what he's telling me. The guy's name, Francis de Sales. And he's talking about language and how that affects us. And I was curious because I don't ever remember you really cussing or using bad language. And I was wondering why. I'm curious.
I typically don't. And that comes from, I think deep-rooted is an aim to please. Because I want to do things that people, like I want to, I guess, use pleasing language. Now, that being said, times when I did use bad words the most were like playing college basketball, just around that culture and my teammates. It was like, it became part of the lexicon pretty easily. And then basketball season always ended like in Lent sometime. And I'd always like give up. Use the curse words and then like it'd be fine till next season. You know, but like in my adult years it's been pretty easy to do, and I think it stems from something our mom taught. Do you remember any? She has a lot of catchy sayings or whatever, but do you remember this?
No, Moira would. That's what we need to get.
Moira, she doesn't forget anything. No, I think mom would say, like, your language is a window into your heart. So your word choice is kind of a glimpse inward into your emotional state.
Totally.
And I think that affected me. I think that was a big influence. And not that I never use a bad word. I definitely do. But that's the other thing too, is like a bad word can be a very powerful tool for emphasis.
Right.
And if you desensitize people to your language and you want some emphasis, you want to get their attention, how do you do it?
Yeah.
You know? So you can use attention-grabbing words to, you know, when you need them, if you've saved them for those moments.
Mm-hmm.
I remember dad used swear words very infrequently and none when we were little, but as I got older, he used them and it got my attention for sure. Yeah. Or my buddy's attention. When we were acting like idiots.
He must've done that more for your guys', you and your friends than mine.
Well, you had, your friends were better behaved than my friends.
That's probably true.
But yeah, I think, you know, part of his leadership in our household. Our parents are pretty good about that. But
well, I know there's, it's very trendy, at least in our generation right now. It's like totally okay if you use, and I have no problem when people cuss in front of me. It's not a big deal. Mm-hmm. And actually a lot of people who are trying to live out, like, you know, really spiritually profound lives, like they will be cussing a lot. I've noticed that. Actually, a lot of them think it's cool. I mean, they really think, like, I, you know, I've seen some studies that didn't even really make a whole lot of sense to me. I don't know if they're really verified, but some people said people who cuss more have like a bigger vocabulary or something like that. And I'm like, well, only if you're adding in the cuss words, maybe. They don't ever sound like it. They sound like they have less of a vocabulary, but.
Yeah, I've heard different, because when you use like, effing as a adjective, right? Mm-hmm. You just use that instead of more descriptive words, or, you know, like you can use a swear word as an adverb or adjective really easily, and you lose more specific or more meaningful words if that's like a habit that you have.
Yeah. I mean, I stopped cussing probably in high school at some point. I started because it was like, yeah, I'm a teenager, a rebel, or whatever. I stopped some point because I realized, I mean, if you're going to be really deliberate and diligent about being the person, the thing that you want to be, you have to be pure about it. You have to be, in other words, I really like this because, I mean, people know that I'm like pretty Christian and I pray all the time and I really like this stuff. But Catherine of Siena, I'm going to drop her here. She,
give a little bit of a, give us, you Catherine, know, a little synopsis of who she was. She's pretty cool.
She is as cool as it gets, really. She is a woman in the 1300s who pretty much changed all of Europe. As a woman in her 20s and early 30s, she died like 36 or something like that. And she's a mystic, right? She had incredible mystical experiences, including she dictated a whole book while levitating and in mystical prayer, which is pretty cool. There's like 10 people, eyewitnesses for that. But yeah, she's this really young woman. She lived in her family's household in Northern Italy. And she wrote to kings and princes and queens and popes, had a lot of influence in the world because of her holiness. People really respected her. So she's really cool. Really cool. And anyways, she wrote, no one becomes holy by accident. Right? It's a really good line, because you don't just stumble. Whatever you're pursuing, really, whatever you're pursuing, for me, that's what I'm trying to pursue. For other people, it's different. You don't just fall into it. Like, you don't fall into being an Olympic athlete. You don't, you know? You can't stumble across it and then you're like, whoa, I'm really good at throwing javelin. I'm like number one in the world and I just did it by mistake, right? You have to be very intentional. And for me, I wanted to be this pure thing, vessel, whatever you call it, not pure in the sense of I'm, you know, like whatever. I'm not like a bad person or whatever. Pure in the sense that, like, if you have pure chocolate, it's all the way chocolate. There's nothing else in it. You know what I mean?
So you want to be purely you.
Like, I wanted to be singular.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? And so for me, that meant excluding kind of these outside sources, these influences, and being something that was really direct. And to me, that meant avoiding that stuff. And also one thing that I heard that was really influential for me was, like, poison comes through the mouth to the body.
Mm-hmm.
Poison comes through the ear to the heart. So it's like what we hear that really poisons and corrupts our heart. I'm not saying that that's what, like, bad language is. That's probably a better example of people who talk bad about people all the time. They're very uncharitable in their language.
Yeah. Now, I think swear words can be used with great humor, you know, when used appropriately, and, like, it can bring, like, happiness or joy or whatever. I think it's the poison in this example comes from, like, malice, hatred, anger.
And anger, jealousy. I believe anger can be used for a reason. I mean, philosophers said that anger is really that emotion that gets you to do something.
Yeah, it's energizing.
It is energizing, right? That's the woke culture is about anger, really. But I think anger is also, like, too powerful, you know? It's like, although I can use a blowtorch to light fire or, like, light a candle or something, I don't do it because it's really powerful. I don't keep a blowtorch on my belt all day long just in case I have to, like, help someone light a cigarette or something. You know what I mean? It's like, it's almost too powerful and energizing. I don't think I have the self-control for it. So I just avoid anger altogether. That's what I'm trying to do, at least. You know what I'm saying? It's a weird analogy. Kind of like, how did we get here? But,
well, that's how we cultivate our being. We just kind of stumble through this, Nick. I have a different attachment to anger than you.
Okay. Let's hear it.
I just am historically completely blind to it in myself. I see it in other people. I've seemed to attract it into my life in relationships and things like that, like angry people. But for me, I don't really respond with anger to anything. And it didn't really occur to me. And I thought I was kind of above it or something. But I remember a counselor I was speaking with, probably last, like, a year ago or 2 years ago. 2 years ago, probably. Man, oh, time is moving. And he asked me, he's like, well, I was telling him something, and he's like, well, does that make you angry? I'm like, no, because, you know, I know what this person's going through. I know what they're dealing with. And, like, I get that they behave that way. It makes sense to me. And I don't, you know, I'm not angry. He's like, well, I'm angry for you. He's like, you're being mistreated. And I was like, oh. He's like, well, when was the last time you were angry? I was like, I don't know. I was thinking about it. I'm like, I don't really remember. It's been a long time. And He's like, well, it's going somewhere. And it's probably true. I was repressing it because I at some point made a rule that it's like, I can't be an angry person. And so I just had a switch that said, when it's anger, diffuse it into something else, not anger. It's never expressed that way. I've since better at recognizing and then expressing anger. I'm still not an angry person, but I'm better at like recognizing if I'm angered. And so it's not repressed or suppressed, which is a topic I think we introduced like an hour ago. We can get back into that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, as part of that, I think it can be very positive, psychologically speaking, to express emotion, but it also is energizing for that emotion. It's like people have to do the right amount. So it's like with anger, especially, it's like, I imagine this cup, it's like you could only take so much anger before it starts to spill over. You don't want to energize and keep pouring anger in. Like you don't want to listen to, like I've had to stop listening to podcasts recently that I really enjoyed because it's just, it's like anger masked with pleasantry. And I didn't even notice that. But I'd get home at the end of the day after my drive and I'd be like, I'm like fired up about certain things in the world that's happening. And I was like, wait a minute. It's not bad. The podcast is not bad. It's actually really good, but I have to empty that cup somehow, you know? And I only have so much time in the day to do it. You get what I'm saying?
Sure. Yep. Okay. I follow you.
And actually, that is a really interesting point I wanted to bring up. That happened with one of my clients. And it was about like, so with one of my clients, she was getting a bunch of, she was just dealing with a lot of stress, a lot of overwhelm, a lot of distractions, maybe some fear, maybe some insecurity. It's a classic thing that I'm seeing a lot of people. And it'll show up as some kind of mental health thing when I'm working on them in emergence. Mental pillar of their health will come up. Jake knows what I'm talking about here. But just think of like any classic mental health thing, anxiety, depression, whatever. It's kind of how she was showing up. And I've seen this actually in several different people recently. I wanted to bring it up, but I'm going to call it like, a mental fast. She had all of this stuff in her cup, so to speak. Her cup was full. It was overflowing. It was spilling out. And the best thing seemed to be, and she had the, you know, the cleverness and the grace to figure this out herself. She was being very intuitive to her body. She just went and did nothing for like 3 hours. She just tried to like, you know, sit, reflect, meditate, but without dwelling on stuff, just kind of letting things come and go. I just emptied out everything. And by the end of it, she was happy. She was peaceful. She was all these things she was hoping for. And it was like a total reset. And it was like, it clicked for me. I'm like, oh my gosh, that's what it's like. It's like a mental fast or something. And I realized, man, we are, you know, we talk about this over and over and over again, but we are being so inundated with distraction. We talk about attention all the time. See like 5 of our previous episodes. We talk about this a lot. I thought it was really cool to see this in practice that, I mean, who sits around doing nothing for hours, but that like totally reset her. And she's, you know, she's been fine ever since then. She's not dealing with the same stuff. The same stress is there. The same circumstances in her life are there, but she's feeling so much better about it. What do you think about that, Jake?
Well, doesn't that point to, I think, the signature thing of healing is, and it's rest. So I don't really, I prescribe to some people, especially people who have sleeping issues, thought curfews. So you pick a time, an hour before you want to be asleep, and you're only allowed to think about certain things. So like your problems, your work, school, exams, deadlines, family troubles, financial troubles, whatever it is. It's like that doesn't get to occupy your mind. And it takes time. Like, you know, it's habits and it's muscle memory. Like you, if you tend to worry, it's kind of hard to do, but it's a practice. And you're like, oh, you know what? It's after 9 o'clock. I don't get to think about that. It'll be there for me tomorrow when I wake up. And so just getting discipline of where your thoughts go, because there's a time to be like, okay, I have real problems that need to be addressed. Mm-hmm. But if it's like, if it's going to be waiting for you in the morning and you want to get a good night's sleep, create thought curfews where you just, you're disciplined about what thoughts come in. And this isn't like repression. This isn't avoidance. It's just like, I get to rest.
Scheduling. We schedule everything anyways, right?
Yeah. My mental, emotional state gets to think about happy, joyful things for this next hour, and then I'm going to go to sleep.
That's cool. I was thinking about with vacation. I mean, part of the reason why people are so happy on vacation is because that's pretty much what they do. They're like, I'm on vacation. I'm only doing this once this year. I'm not going to think about the stressful stuff right now. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be present with my loved ones. I'm going to be present with myself. I'm not going to, it's like, I didn't pay all this money to go over here and check Facebook. So like a lot of times people are, you know, they've cleared the distractions out and they're present, they're focused, they have a mental rest, you know. Mm-hmm. You guys can, everyone can take a lesson from that and do a little mental vacation.
Yeah, just schedule it in. Like, I don't get to think about my problems in these hours. Mm-hmm. Think about good things.
Yeah. And everyone's life is different. You know, you might be able to do this in the evening. You might be able to do this. You might want to do this, you know, first thing in the morning. Everyone's different. On the weekend, pick a day of the week where you're like, I'm not going to do any of this stuff. Maybe once a month, you know, I don't know. Take a little reset.
At what time of day do you actually check emails?
I wait till like right before I leave for work.
So last second.
Yeah.
I wait till I get to work. But I'm not driving like you are. Mm-hmm. Like if someone like changes something or whatever, it's my commute's 5 minutes.
Yeah. I've got to think things through a little bit, but it's played a huge role for me too. In the morning, so, I'm like uninterrupted for at least an hour. There's nothing.
Yeah, my phone stays in airplane mode.
My phone's off through the night, so sorry if you ever have an emergency you want to call me, but I don't even off turn too. It on. Yeah.
Okay. Well,
you don't have any kids or anything.
I'll put up the bad signal.
Okay, good. Perfect.
So my phone's on airplane mode until a certain time. So I don't like wake up and have to respond to outside distractions.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's a big deal, man. That's had a huge effect for me. And it's no good if I just fill that time with other distractions.
Yeah.
Something I did for 2 years while I was going through school. I don't even know. I felt like I needed to do this. It was like an intuitive thing. I didn't actually really think about it. But you know, when you're in school, you're there for 12 hours a day or whatever it is, right? Pretty intense. I would take 10 minutes a day. Doesn't actually sound like much at all. And I would go outside in the sun, which I wouldn't get much of when I was in school, during lunch usually. And I would do nothing. I would literally sit there and I wouldn't think about school. I wouldn't think about, okay, I gotta do this, I gotta do that. I would just literally sit there and then like look at the trees or something, you know? And I'm telling you, that was incredible.
That seems like rest to me.
Yeah. So, I mean, even 10 minutes goes a long way.
Yeah. 10 minutes can make a huge difference. So yeah, noticed that about my, like my meditations are pretty short, like in the morning, and I don't just meditate. I don't do like transcendental or guided. I do me. Mm-hmm. And that I do one out until I feel like I did it. But what I noticed is I have the benefit of meditating a lot throughout the day. Like half of the work that I do when I'm working on a person is in a meditative state.
Totally.
And I think, so if the goal of being, if the goal of the act of meditating is to be in a meditative state, then like I get to do that a lot more than the typical person. And so in the mornings, I don't feel it's as necessary. So what I usually like to do is like install some like good software. So I'll listen to a thing or like read a thing that like puts some good information in my head starting the day, like nutrients for my being.
That's good. Like a supplement for your brain, for your soul, your heart, whatever.
Yeah. You wouldn't want to like wake up and like drink a Coca-Cola and eat French fries. I mean, you might want to, but you know that that's not a good start to the day, right? You're not giving the body things that will edify or build up or support the cellular structure of your body. And why would you want to do that mentally and emotionally?
Yeah. I like to, this might be hard for people to relate to. You know, the work that we do, the more clarity and the easier it is for you to like plug in, I guess is the only word I could really use, the better you can do the work. And so the first thing that I like to do in the morning is just sit in silence until I feel like I'm plugged in. Like, this is the best I can describe it. Sorry for all those people who can't relate to this at all. But I like to sit in silence and get to a point where if there was a spiritual voice that can talk to you, whether it's God or, you know, whatever else, right? Whatever, like you can hear the spirit world. Like that's what I want to get to every morning.
So stillness and quietness.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm not a spiritually advanced person, but I feel like that's something everyone could do. So
I agree. I like it, Nick.
Yeah, me too.
We're getting kind of late in the pot. Let's talk about repression and suppression.
Okay.
As primary defense mechanisms. Okay. Because I brought this up when we were talking about our nephews who are little. And suppression or repression can be very helpful survival mechanisms, because when you're younger and your ability to process what's happening, the difficult things that's happening, when your ability to process is less than the actual stress that's going on, a natural defense mechanism is, I'm not going to process this. I'm just going to bury it.
Yeah. I mean, that's what the four things, we've talked about this before, the four things, I think this comes from people who know psychology are going to, you know.
Cool, email us.
I got this from Hawkins, who was talking about Freud.
He's a psychologist.
Hawkins is a psychologist, psychiatrist. Anyways, he said that the four ways we really deal with this stuff is repression, which is the unconscious pushing down. It's when I don't know. It's those really traumatic events where people forget it because their psyche has been like, nope, not dealing with this. It's gone. It's not gone. It's just down deep. And actually, a lot of times I'll find when repressed memories come out, people will start to be like, oh, I had this memory happen. I didn't even remember this, you know, repressed stuff. It's usually not even like the deepest, darkest thing you could think of. It's like, why did you, it's just because they're a kid and they couldn't deal with it. And it was just like, I can't deal with this. Later on in life, maybe. 30 years down the line, I'll bring this up again. And suppression is when you do it from an act of the will, you know, it's like, oh, I'm not going to think about my financial issues for the next 2 weeks until I get paid. Then I'll think about, you know, that's suppression. And then there's expression. And a lot of people, they'll deal with their issues by just like getting it all out, yelling at the, you know, in the car or whatever. And then there's escapism, right? It's like, that's, you know, drugs, alcohol, other ways of escaping. So mm-hmm. Those are the four ways. Really, those are that's it. And they can be very helpful. Like if you lose a loved one, you can't deal with that immediately.
No, and I mean, it depends on your emotional maturity, like what you've had to go through, how strong you are, you know, and a child isn't, they haven't had the enough experiences and enough character formation to deal with painful or very stressful or frightening things. And so the goal though of an adult is to get there, is to do the work, right? Because just because something got repressed because it was scary and you were little doesn't mean it's not affecting you. It's like, you know, something rotten in, you know, a dark recess of the home. Like it'll affect you. Mm-hmm. Or I like to think of it, and it's in Florida. So, you know, there's mold and stuff here. I like to think of it, if there's like black mold on the other side of your drywall, the side you can't see, doesn't mean it's not hurting you or damaging you just because you can't see it. And just because you're too afraid to take a look back there. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I guess I really wanted just to introduce that idea of that. It's like, it's a defense mechanism and it's totally okay. But part of our job as a grown-up is to go looking. Okay, what's still affecting me? What served me at some point in my life that no longer serves me and needs to be resolved?
Yeah.
That goes back to holism. Mm-hmm. What's going to make you more whole?
Yeah. And, you know, going back to Hawkins with this too, is that I'm going to do a direct quote from Hawkins here, but the core of spiritual work is aligned with undoing and the unloading of the mind rather than its enrichment, right? Goes back to that whole, I'm allowing, I'm not like grasping at, I'm attaining. It's the image of floating rather than like flailing in the water, you know, I'm just going to float and be. It's about being, not doing, right? So the majority of our work is like, I've got to, as an adult, is like, I'm going to go unload all this stuff. I'm going to find it and I'm going to let it go.
Mm-hmm.
And by doing that, we rise up to higher and greater levels of awareness and being. So
I love it. Well, that cool. Seems like a good place to wrap up.
That's a good place to wrap up. Yeah.
All right. Thanks everyone for listening. If you want to find me, Dr. Jake Hyde is my handle on Instagram. I started posting some things. I don't do that much, to be honest, but I'm starting to. So good for me.
Nice. Well done.
I'm evolving. And you can go to my website, drjakehyde.com, to reach out to me directly as well, or to see what I'm doing or what I'm about. What about you, Nick?
Well, they could also, we have a Cultivated Being handle on Instagram. I think it's the Cultivated Being or the Cultivated Being podcast, something like that. And we have at least 10 followers on there. It's pretty sweet. And then you could also email us at thecultivatedbeing@gmail.com, or you could reach out to me at getinsideouthealth.com.
Perfect. Reach out. Let us know how wrong Nick was about his psychology stuff. We love hearing it.
Mm-hmm.
Also, other questions, comments, topics you'd like to talk about, questions you want answered. We will answer them. Promise.
Yep. And if you are a celebrity, and you heard this and you're like, oh my gosh, I'm Haley Williams from Paramore and Nick wants me to work on, you know, reach out to us. Okay.
Yeah. Nick will consider fitting you in to his busy schedule.
I might be available. Good. Leave it like that. All right.
Peace out, Jake. Love you, everybody. Love you, Nick. Bye.
All right. Bye.